COVID-19 and the Lord's Supper is our topic today. In the Bible, there are three terms at least in the Bible in reference to the Lord, references the Lord's Supper. 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 20, Lord's Supper. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, and Acts chapter 2 and verse 42, the breaking of bread is referenced. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 16, some versions say communion, other versions say sharing. But this is a reference to the Lord's Supper. There are three terms that are used today in the religious world, and they are not found in the Bible. Terms like the Eucharist. The word Eucharist comes from the Greek word giving thanks, and it is a word that is used in reference to what Jesus did when he took of the bread and took of the fruit of the vine and gave thanks. That is the Greek word Eucharist. And so it has come to be called the partaking of the Lord's Supper, the Eucharist. And yet the Lord never referenced it that way, and the Bible never references that. In some places, and especially in the Catholic Church, it is referenced as a Mass. Or the very fact that we do this is referenced as a sacrament. That we do, that proves that we are holy and righteous. Many issues there have been over the years regarding the matter of the Lord's Supper. Is it to be taken with one cup or multiple cups? Should the bread be broken by the server or by the partaker? Should there be a second Sunday evening or a second serving of the Lord's Supper? Should it be accompanied by a meal? This is taking and getting steam now in reference to meals and love feast. Should it be taken to the shut-in and the sick and those unable to get out? Should the Lord's Supper be taken to them so they can partake? How do we partake of it when we're on vacation or when we're at camp or when we're somewhere where other Christians are? Can we partake of it there? Must it be partaken of in an assembly? I want to look at COVID-19 and the issue that it created for the Lord's Supper. Many churches, in reference to or in deference to our government and to the restrictions placed upon them in various places, have decided that they would cancel their services. We talked about this last Sunday. And so having concluded that services must be canceled, another question arose. What do we do about partaking of the Lord's Supper? I will say, at least to their credit, they recognize the importance of that, that needs to be done. And so what do we do about that? And so what I can see is that the issue has been handled in one of two ways. One of the ways in which brethren have said that they're going to handle it is that they have believed that God would excuse them from this obligation just as he would if they were sick and unable to attend. In their mind, they were prevented, sometimes by sickness, in this particular case, by government restrictions from attending. And so since they're in deference to government restrictions or in deference to the concern for the health of their brethren, since they're making these decisions because of that, then they believe that God would not hold them accountable for not partaking of the Lord's Supper on Sunday because of these extenuating circumstances. There have been other brethren who have said, well, the observing of the Lord's Supper is too important to not do that. It has to be done. And so they have decided that they're going to be able to continue to do that, and they're going to partake of it, and that it could be done through streaming their worship services with all of the members watching from their homes and partaking as led by the virtual server. I've watched some of these particular places who have done this. I've watched some of them just to see how did they go about doing this. But my question is that consistent with the pattern revealed for partaking of the Lord's Supper? What has happened is, in the case of COVID-19, it has created some issues that heretofore probably were there, but there really wasn't an impetus to study that. There wasn't a reason to study that. And as I said, there's always been issues in regards to the Lord's Supper and regarding the various aspects and various details and various particulars of the Lord's Supper. And so in reference to how some churches have responded, and we're going to meet, and we're going to meet virtually, and we're going to still partake of the Lord's Supper, and we're going to do that virtually, and so you get your bread and your cup, and you have that at home, and you tune into our broadcast, and when that virtual server is saying that prayer and saying, okay, now take the bread, and then saying that prayer, okay, now take the cup, it's very much like exactly what we did here today. It's just that you would be doing it at your home as they watched it on their computer, on their TV, on their tablet, whatever it is that they were watching this streaming service. But is it consistent with the pattern? So that raises a question. What's the pattern? What is the pattern for partaking? I think we need to understand, first of all, that when it comes to the matter of pattern thinking, we need to recognize that there are certain aspects about the things that we do that there is a pattern. In 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 13, the Apostle Paul writes to Timothy and he says, "Retain the standard of sound words which you have heard from me in the faith and love which are in Christ Jesus." That word, that Greek word standard in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 13, it is the idea of an outline, a sketch, brief and summary exposition, Thayer says. It is to draw a sketch or a first draft as painters when they begin a picture. It's a delineation, sketch, concise representation or form. Lytle and Scott in their Dictionary of New Testament Words that it's an outline, it's a pattern. So I want you to understand that what Paul says is, the first thing that he says to Timothy is that we have a standard, we have an outline, we have a sketch, we have a pattern. But my question would be, well, what did Paul want Timothy to do with it? And Paul tells Timothy, I want you to retain that. The English Standard Version translates that word retain as follow. The New King James translates it as hold fast. The Holman Christian Standard Bible translates that as hold on. Zodiati said it is to have and it is to hold, implying continued possession. Timothy, there is an outline, there is a sketch, there is a pattern. And that's been out there, and you need to hold on to that. You need to hold fast to that. You need to follow that. In the very last, some of the very last words that Paul ever pens, Paul tells Timothy, don't give up the pattern. Hold on to that pattern. Why would this be important? Because I want you to notice that just a few verses later, yes, I know it's in the next chapter, but Paul didn't write in chapters, and so I want you to notice that just a few verses later, in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, notice what Timothy was supposed to do. The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Isn't that consistent with the definition of pattern? In that Zodiati told us that it is to have, it is to hold, it is implying continued possession. Timothy, that which you've heard from me, I want you to hold on to. That which you've heard from me, I want you to follow. And then I want you to find men, and I want you to entrust with in them what I entrusted with you. I've given you the sketch. I've given you the pattern, and you need to retain that. You need to retain that so that you can find faithful men as I found you. You can find faithful men, and you give them the pattern. You give them the sketch. You give them the outline, and they will teach that. That's the very essence of the word to retain. But I want you to think about the three words that are used in our three definitions. Three words that I find interesting. Outline, sketch, and pattern. There are two aspects when we think about these three words, and that the fact that these are the three words that are used to describe and to define for us this Greek word that's translated standard in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 13. I want to suggest to you that with all of these words, there are two aspects to the word itself. There's a generic aspect, if you will. The word generic, just in this, both of these definitions come from the American Heritage Dictionary. It just means relating to or descriptive of entire group or class. Cancer is a generic term for a group of diseases in which cells proliferate wildly. So, if it is a condition wherein cells are proliferating wildly, we call that cancer. That's a grouping of a medical condition, if you will. I want you to notice that in this word and in this matter of standard and pattern and sketch and outline, there's also a very specific aspect to it. There is something that is explicit. There's something that is definite. If we use the illustration found in the generic definition, we might say, well, we've got this proliferation of cells. Oh, well, you've got cancer. You've got a proliferation of cells in the liver. Now we've got it specified. Some of them might say, well, I've got cancer. Well, where is your cancer? Yes, okay, I get that. I know what you're saying. You're telling me that you've got a proliferation of cells somewhere in your body, but I want to know, that's generically speaking, so I know the general medical condition that you've got, and I know the category that it falls within. But where is that proliferation of cells? And so we specify that further, don't we? Liver cancer, lung cancer, kidney cancer. I want you to think about applying these different aspects of generic and specific. Think about how that in these three words that are used in the lexicons to define the word for pattern, that we see this generic aspect and specific aspect. Think about an outline. Probably if you've ever been in school, you've had to do an outline. And you recognize that there are some generic aspects to an outline, and there are some specific aspects. And so let's say that, well, I need you to do a speech, 3 to 5 minutes, on abortion. Okay, well, that's specific, isn't it? The topic has been specified for you. It wasn't, I need you to give me a 3 to 5 minute speech. That's broad, isn't it? No, I need you to give me a 3 to 5 minute speech on abortion. Specific. I need an outline on abortion. Say you're going to present a sermon, and the best way to present a sermon is to have an outline of what you want to talk about. That is very helpful. And so if you ever presented a sermon, you say, well, I'm going to present a sermon on abortion, you probably start out with an outline. But any of us who know and who have preached, you recognize that you may start out with a very broad, general outline, but you've probably heard someone say, well, that's just a basic outline. It needs to be fleshed out. It needs to have more details in it. This idea of an outline is both specific regarding the subject of abortion, but it's generic and, okay, well, what are you going to talk about in reference to that? You've been given a specific topic, but you've not been told how many points to make in reference to that. You've not been told the specific details of what needs to be covered in reference to abortion. You've not been told the approach that needs to be taken. All that's left up to you to decide. That's the generic aspect of an outline. But the specific part of the outline is, but it better be on abortion. You come in there with a speech on capital punishment, and it may be fantastic, but you're violating the specifics of what was given you. The speech had to be on abortion. Now, maybe it's one of those things where you make it as long as you want to make it. You cover whatever you want to cover. It just better be on abortion. The specifics and generics of the idea of outline. You know, it's in reference to a sketch as well. You remember in the definition, it was an artist goes to paint a picture or something. Say, well, okay, a lot of times what happens is an artist, okay, I don't know this, because I can't draw a stick figure, but I have been told that those who can draw, a lot of times will draw a sketch of what it is that they want to do, or a sketch of what it is that they want to paint. And so let's say, well, I want to paint a bowl of fruit. Well, I sketch a bowl of fruit. Well, if you were to look at a sketch, you would recognize that, okay, well, that's a bowl of fruit, but there are no colors. There's no background. There's a lot of details missing. But the specific picture is definitely going to be a bowl of fruit. It is that, but there's a lot of generic that's not there. The number of fruit, the size of fruit, the bowl, the color of each fruit. You know, it's the same thing in reference to a pattern. I watched my mom make many a dress on the living room floor or cut one out on the dining room table. And I can remember going to the pattern store and her going through all kinds of a section in this particular store of vertical filing cabinets where she'd pull out and go through and look at the patterns for the dress that she wanted to make. And so she would get it out and she would say, and on that pattern, there's normally about two or three different styles of dress. And say, well, I'm going to make this dress right here, Adonis. And so I would know what it was going to look like. It was going to be short sleeves. It was going to be length to here. It was going to have a V-neck or whatever. And so I would know that that part of that was specific. But there's a lot about that that I didn't know and that she didn't know. What kind of material am I going to make that dress out of? What color is that material going to be? In some patterns, you could select putting a zipper in or putting buttons in if you want. There were choices that still yet had to be made. But the pattern was definitely going to be a dress. It wasn't going to be a suit. It wasn't going to be a vest. It was definitely going to be a dress. That was specific. But there was a lot about the pattern that was generic that was left up to be chosen and selected. Think about applying the different aspects scripturally. An outline and a sketch and a pattern of an ark was given to Noah. And there were some very specific aspects about that. God told Noah, I want this ark to be 300 by 50 by 30 cubits. Specifically, these are the dimensions. I want a window on the top. I want a door in the side. Very specific. Noah had no choice because that part of the pattern, the outline, the sketch was specific. Those had been legislated. But there were a lot of generic aspects as to Noah's command to build an ark. What would the length of the lumber need to be? What type of tools would he need? How would he transport that lumber? How long should he work on this every day? God didn't specify. That's a generic aspect of the pattern. Noah, I want a 300 by 50 by 30 window, door. That's specified. Can't change that. Legislated. Stick to the pattern. But there are some generic aspects to it. Noah, you decide how it is that you want to acquire the lumber, the length of the lumber. These are matters of liberty. These are matters that Noah could choose so long as he followed the specifics of the pattern. Think about applying the different aspects of a pattern, of a sketch, of an outline to the Lord's Supper. There is an outline, there is a sketch, there is a pattern that we have to follow in reference to partaking of the Lord's Supper. There will be matters which are specific, and there will be matters which are generic. There will be matters where we are at liberty, authorized, generic authority, we would say, that we are at liberty to make choices within the realm of the generic. Because God has left that part of the pattern, that part of the outline, that part of the sketch, He's left that open for us to choose what would best accomplish what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Most of the time, what we need to accomplish, how we need to accomplish the specifics of the pattern. How do we need to do that? We're at liberty to make those choices. What is the best way for us to partake of the Lord's Supper? There are generic aspects to that. But there are some specific aspects to the matter of the Lord's Supper as well. And we don't have any liberty in these areas. Noah couldn't say, well, Lord, the trees in our area, you know, the size that they are and the width that they are. I tell you, an ark about 250 by 50 by 30 would really work better for me. I think I'll just make it that way because that's the lumber that I can get. That's easier for me to get and take care of that. Wouldn't have worked, would it? Because the pattern had been specified. What I want to look at for the remaining of our time is I only want to look at the parts of the pattern which are relevant to the situation presented by COVID-19. You think about the pattern of the Lord's Supper, and partaking of the Lord's Supper, there are a whole host of details and a whole host of things that we could look at, but I'm only interested in what we described at the very beginning regarding what some churches are doing and doing this virtually. I think they've created a problem for themselves by virtue of what we talked about in reference to the canceling of the assemblies. But here they are now saying, well, we want to partake of the Lord's Supper. And I honor the fact that they want to do that, that they see that as important. But they've created for themselves a problem now. And okay, well, how in can we do that and follow the pattern of the Lord's Supper? Can we say that, well, that's part of the generic aspect of the pattern, and therefore that we can run that in underneath that generic label and be okay in partaking of it virtually, and be okay partaking of it in our various locations wherein we live and watching a server through streaming services? That'd be okay. Or is it possible that maybe there are some specifics of the pattern that's being violated and that's not an option anymore? And one's not at liberty to do that, because it doesn't fall under the realm of generic. It falls under the realm of that which is specific. And so we ask the question then, what is the pattern for partaking? I want to look at the scriptures that are on the slide for you. That will be where at least our focus will be on this particular aspect of the pattern. Acts 20 and 7, 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 18, verse 20 and verse 33. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, more as a supporting point to some of the things that we'll look at. Acts 20 and verse 7. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. 1 Corinthians, the three verses from 1 Corinthians 11, verse 18. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that divisions exist among you, and in part I believe it. Verse 20, therefore when you meet together, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Verse 33, so then my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. Now we've just hit three verses in a context that talks about the Lord's Supper. And Dennis talked about the fact of the Lord's Supper, that, well, we read this all the time. And yes, this is the context that we read because it gives a great many details in reference to the pattern. So it's not surprising then that we would come to 1 Corinthians 11 and try to figure out what's the generics and the specifics of the pattern. And then the last verse I want to look at is 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verses 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. So from these passages, what kind of a pattern begins to surface in reference to specifics and generics in partaking of the Lord's Supper? I want you to notice that, first of all, we have something very specific in reference to when. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 and 1 Corinthians chapter 16 verses 1 and 2, we'll bring about that in just a minute. I want you to notice that it says, on the first day of the week, Acts 20 and verse 7. Why do I bring in 1 Corinthians 16 that's talking about the contribution? I bring that in because, and you probably are well aware and already know where I'm going, I bring that in because this establishes the fact that meeting on the first day of the week was such a known thing that was happening, and there's a reason why that is, but Paul knew that if it's the first day of the week, I know where you're going to be on the first day of the week. I know where the church in Corinth is going to be on the first day of the week, and I'm going to come through there, and I'm going to gather up some money to take, or whatever kind of bounty you want to give, to take to the brethren in Judea. And so instead of me going here and gathering and going to your house and gathering and going to this person's house and gathering, instead of me going to the city of Corinth and hit every brother's house, how about I just come when I know you'll be assembled? Well, how would he know when they'd be assembled? Because on the first day of the week, he knew they would be gathering together. Why? Because he knew that's when they gathered together to partake of the Lord's Supper. He knew that. And that's why he could say, look, I'm coming through. Let's just do it when you regularly gather to partake of the Lord's Supper. Let's do it then, gather that up, so that what? I don't have to do what? I don't have to have a bunch of gatherings. Because I know you'll be together already on the first day of the week. Just like he knew the church in Troas was going to be gathered in Acts chapter 20. And verse 7. But I want you to notice that there are some specifics and some generics in reference even to this. That, well, first day of the week's first day of the week. How much more specific, how generic could that be? Well, obviously, if it's specified, then the day has been specified, right? If it's on the first day of the week, then the first day of the week, every other day is excluded. And I recognize that some will say, and I can remember sitting in Brother W.O. Wharton's Airstream trailer and studying with him when he was holding a meeting in Poto, Oklahoma, and talking about this matter of authority. And I remember him telling me, Adonis, specific authority doesn't exclude, specific authority specifies. That's all that specific authority does. And I recognize that. But I still contend, as I contend with them, yes, I recognize that specific authority specifies, but when it specifies, then everything else in that class automatically becomes what? Excluded. It's just everything else becomes excluded because what has been specified is what has been legislated is what God wants. So, when God said, on the first day of the week. Now, we can go back and we can look at why would God select that? Why would that be so important to Christians? Why wasn't it on the Sabbath like it was in the Old Testament when that was important to the Jews? We can look at that and we can understand that was the day upon which Jesus was resurrected. There are plenty of reasons why. Doesn't matter. We know that that's what the church did on the first day of the week. When you're gathered together, that's specific. But you know, there are some generic aspects even to the first day of the week, isn't there? Well, what time during that time period are we going to gather to partake of the Lord's Supper? When are we going to do that? Are we going to do that at 9, 10? Are we going to do that in the evening? Some churches weren't able to meet in the morning. Some churches in the first century weren't able to meet in the mornings because of shift work and because of slaves, and they didn't get off, and so they would have to do a full day's work. And so there are many churches that would meet in the evening. And they were partaking of the Lord's Supper in the evening. In our nation, most partake of it in the morning. Some are partaking of it at noon. Doesn't matter, does it? Well, has it been specified? No. The day has been specified, but any time on that day, we're at liberty to partake of the Lord's Supper. You see, there are generics and specifics, even in the matters of patterns and sketches and outlines. There's a second thing I would suggest to you, and that is a matter of where. Where should this be done? In Acts 20 and verse 7, 1 Corinthians 11, 18, verse 20 and verse 33, I want you to notice that as we look at individuals doing this or partaking of the Lord's Supper, what do we learn? Well, we learn from Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, when we were gathered together. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 18, when you come together, verse 20, when you meet together, verse 33, when you come together. The specifics of this seems rather obvious. An assembly has been specified, and thus partaking of it individually, or taking it to the sick, or taking it to the shut-in, or doing so virtually through live streaming, it seems to me is excluded from what we find in the specifics in reference to the pattern. It's been excluded. It is to be partaken of in an assembly. But there are some generics even in reference to the where, aren't there? Like, well, where will we assemble? The location of this assembly hasn't been specified. It might be in a home. Romans chapter 16 and verse 5 talks about greet the church that is in their house. And if you go back up to about verse 3, the there happens to be Aquila and Priscilla. It could be in a building or a motel or a storefront, or some have gathered in the parking lot. I can remember one time gathering under my grandpa's big oak tree in his front yard. The congregation was small and we attended, so we just gathered under the big oak tree in his front yard. As we think about this pattern in reference to the partaking of the Lord's Supper, I want you to notice that we've seen that it's in the assembly, but there's a why aspect to it that I think is answered in Acts 20 and 7 and 1 Corinthians 11, 20 and 33. The question is, all right, so they were assembling. They assembled. And they assembled on the first day of the week. And it was partaken of on the first day of the week when they assembled. But I want you to notice, why were they assembled? Notice that in these verses it says in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, when we were gathered together to do what? To break bread. Now that's not a meal, because we already saw earlier in our lesson that there are various names and reference that have been given to the Lord's Supper. And one of the names that refers to the Lord's Supper isn't always just the Lord's Supper. Sometimes it's the breaking of bread. And so Paul says, when we were gathered together to break bread, it wasn't to have a meal. We were gathered together to partake of the Lord's Supper. That was the reason we gathered. We gathered to break the bread of the unleavened bread, to drink the fruit of the vine, and remember the Lord's death. That's why we were gathered together. And Paul knew that they were going to do that. He tarried so that he could be there. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 20, when you meet together, he says, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. So, now, wait a minute. Well, you look at the context of that, and that was the problem. The problem was that what the Corinthians were doing was not doing what they should have been doing. When you gather together, Paul says, you're together to do what? To partake of the Lord's Supper. But when you gather together, it's not to do that. And what does Paul say about that? That's a problem. That's a problem. Because your gathering together is to be for the purpose of partaking of the Lord's Supper. But when you gather together, it's not to do that. That's why you've got some of the issues, Paul says later. And so what is his conclusion? When you come together to eat, that's what you need to be doing. Then how do we solve this problem of kind of the chaos that was going on in the Corinthian assembly and everybody just partaking of when they wanted to partake? You wait for one another. The solution wasn't that, well, don't worry about it because you don't really have to worry about partaking of it when you gather together. That's not really the reason that you're gathering together. Is no. When you gather together, it should be for the partaking of the Lord's Supper. It's not for the partaking of the Lord's Supper. And so here's how you solve that. You wait till everybody gets there so that, as an assembly, you can partake of that. Now, there are some specifics and there are some generics. The purpose for the assembly has already been specified. Now, don't get excited and let me explain this. The purpose of the assembly has already been specified, and thus all of the purposes, singing, giving, teaching, and praying, are excluded. Now don't start hyperventilating. This does not mean that these are excluded from the assembly. God has authorized these within this assembly. There are scriptures that talk about that. Ephesians 5:19, Colossians 3:16, singing. The giving, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. Teaching and praying, Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. The church. But the purpose for the assembling was to partake of the Lord's Supper. And while you're there partaking of the Lord's Supper, Paul says, let's have a gathering. Let's have a collection so that I can give to the poor saints. While we're gathered together, let's have praying. Let's have singing. Let's have teaching. But the purpose of the assembly, at least according to what I can determine from God's word, was to partake of the Lord's Supper. The purpose wasn't for preaching. The purpose wasn't for singing. The purpose wasn't for praying. But those things can be put in the assembly. God has allowed those to be in the assembly so long as we understand the purpose for our gathering was to partake of the Lord's Supper. There are some generics, though. How the partaking is to be accomplished. Served by attendance. Each participant passes by the table. Should the church or the individual provide the bread and the juice? This has become an issue of late. I didn't even know there was an issue in places, but it has become an issue in a discussion. Should the church be providing the bread and the juice, or should individuals bring their own? So, that's up to... We have liberty to make that choice. We don't have liberty as to why it is that we're gathered to remember the Lord's death. And one final thing that I want you to notice... Some have called it a when. I call it a where. I want you to notice that when they assembled as a church. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, I did not put this scripture back up, probably should have. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, for in the first place, when you come together as a church. And so what happens then, Paul says, when you come together as a church, and then the next two times that he mentions assembly, he's already established the fact that this isn't just a random assembly. This isn't just an assembly of Christians that happen to be in the same area, in the same location, on this particular week or on this particular day, but that the purpose of this assembly was when you are gathered together as a church. And so every other reference in that text to an assembly takes us back to gathered together as a church. When you're assembled together as a church, verse 20. When you're assembled together as a church, verse 33. That is established for us every time that Paul references assembly. He's referencing us back to this matter of assembling together as a church. Now I want you to think about some specifics and some generics in that. There are some specifics in that they are assembled as a local church. This rules out Christians at camp, on vacation, on a cruise. I know a brethren said, well, we're going to go on a cruise and we've got 10 of us here and you know where two or three are gathered in my name. There I am in the midst of them. And so what we're going to do is we're going to bring our own Lord's Supper and we're going to do it right here and we're going to have our own assembly. But I want you to notice that the pattern says when you are gathered together as a church. Are you an assembly? Yes. Are you a church? No. And so, at least from my mind, it doesn't fit the pattern. This is why when we went to camp, we would not assemble when they started assembling there in the campsite. Not going to do it because I don't see that fits the pattern. And so we would go in and we would go to a local group there and we would worship with them where we knew that they would be. We knew that they would be worshiping on that day. Just like Paul did in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. And we went with them because we wanted to partake of the Lord's Supper in an assembly of Christians gathered as a church and partake of that. Now there are some generics to this as well. What about this assembly of individuals gathered as a church? Well, the location of the assembly, we're kind of back to the point that we made, and yes, I cut and pasted that. Back to the matter of assembly. Well, it could be the location hasn't been specified. It could be at home. It could be in a building. It could be in the motel. It could be the storefront. It could be parking. Wherever the church said, today we're going to gather together as a church in this building. Today we're going to gather together as a church in this motel conference room. Today we're going to gather together as a church in this storefront for the purpose of partaking of the Lord's Supper. It wasn't just a random assembly of a bunch of Christians happened to be at the same area, at the same place. Hey, we're an assembly, and we're two or three gathered together. Let's have the Lord's Supper. Doesn't fit the pattern found in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So what we find is that there are brethren that I think have violated the pattern found in God's Word. When it comes to the matter of partaking of the Lord's Supper, it's on the first day of the week. They're streaming their services on the first day of the week, and that's when they're partaking of it. But it is in an actual assembly, brethren, not a virtual one. It is in an assembly gathered for the purpose of partaking of the Lord's Supper. And it's not just any assembly, but it's an assembly of the local church. It's not just a random assembly. They're gathered together for that purpose. If you're here this morning and your life is not what it needs to be, then I would suggest that you think about the fact that there is a fountain. There is a fountain that is available for all. If you're here this morning and you need to follow the pattern that's been laid down God has told you what one must do to be saved. Believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. If you can do these things, if you're willing to, if you want to put your life into the hands of the Lord, there's a fountain that's been provided that will wash away your sins. You can call on the name of the Lord. You can rise to walk in newness of life. And then you can follow Him being faithful in your service to Him and one day hear Him say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Let us know if we can help you. Come forward while together we stand and while we sing.